You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
This is episode 35 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I am your host, Dio Morales, and I am joined by Marcel Manzano.
Really?
Yep. Say my name. I don't want to say that. Hadouken!
Thank you. Hadouken!
Andrea Longhi.
Hey, guys.
Darwin Schaefer.
What's up, everyone?
And our guest today is Carson Norwood.
Thank you for having me.
Alrighty, so I figure we start by explaining why Carson is here. We participated in an auction to support the Houston Food Bank after the Hurricane Harvey disaster, and Carson won the auction for being a guest host on the Gold Squadron Podcast. So first, Carson, I want to say thank you so much for donating.
Oh, no problem. I'm a native Houstonian. I live in Dallas now, but I was born and raised, and so it really hit, no pun intended, close to home. So I was more than happy to give.
Awesome, dude. Well, we're happy to have you, and we're going to be talking about your topic here in a little bit. But first, I want to do our Patreon update. So first, to our patrons out there, thank you so much for everything that you give. And we are doing our September raffle. Andrea, I figured that you haven't been here in a while. How are you?
Oh, you know, just keeping up with you fools.
That's right. So what is our raffle prize for the month of September?
It is going to be the CAC, or the Campaign Against Cancer Challenge coin. Now, which year's coin is this? Because they've done a few.
It's the one that just got released. It has on one side the Black Sun Syndicate symbol, and on the opposite side it has the illicit slash credit symbol on the other side. It's really cool.
Nice.
It's like
so
purple.
It's a
and silver.
Scum coin.
Yes, yes it is.
I'm surprised you're auctioning it and not keeping it for yourself, Dion.
I have three of them.
Oh, I got that one.
Okay, so our winner is... Who's got the best drum roll impression? You can't actually drum roll your tongue. Never mind. It is John Rivers.
Woo! Ooh, congratulations. So, John Rivers, congratulations on winning the raffle. Now, here's the deal with our raffles. You have to have listened to the show. So, you got until the next one releases to let us know. So, you got 2 weeks. So, let's make sure you listen to the episode, get your coin. And if you know John, let him know, unless you're a patron and you want to win it instead. So you sabotage him by not telling him. So, I mean, that's your choice.
Be a good friend and don't tell him, so you can put it instead.
Unlock the hologram.
Alrighty, guys. So our first topic for the day is going to be talking about the best non-huge ships to use in Epic. So this was Carson's choice of topic. How long have you been playing, Carson?
Since about February, consistently. I had played just a handful of games before then, but really starting in February.
Awesome. And you were saying that you pick... What was the reason for picking this topic?
Oh, just like 2 weeks ago, I had my first Epic game. It was a Team Epic game, and I had a blast playing. So it got my mind thinking about Epic.
Awesome, awesome. Well, here at Gold Squadron, we love Epic play. We do an Epic League once a year, and Darwin, I would say, is definitely one of our better Epic players, so I figured since that's what we'd be talking about, we would have him on the show, help us out.
I don't know how good of a player I am. I'm definitely one of the most passionate about it.
Yeah, you're definitely passionate, for sure. I would say
okay,
you're
okay, that's
good
all it takes.
Yeah, so... Man, where do we start? So for those of you who don't know, right, there's a couple of different Epic formats. We have your normal Epic, which is 300 points. You play one-on-one, and I bring 300 points of whatever I feel like it. Darwin, there's a limit on the number of Epic points you can spend,
yeah.
Right?
I think it's the way it works out. You can either bring one huge, huge ship or two or three small of the ships. I don't know where the number is. They've kind of gotten clear about it, but you can't show up with two raiders or two Tantives, but you can show up with like three rebel transports.
Sweet. And then you also have the Team Epic. event, which is two players that have 400 points on each side. So each player brings 200, and you put your squads together and play against somebody else's squads. And that's also another really fun event. And I think this is what Carson already said. This is where his question stemmed from, because he was like, all right, I have to build the 200-point squad. What is the most basically like efficient thing I could put together? So let's open up the floor and let's help Carson out. Marcel, you want to start?
Can I interject just real quick? Carson, yeah. Why non-huge ships? Is there a reason you don't want to talk about the huge ships?
Well, from playing the game of Epic, I noticed that most of the ships doing work and taking out other ships were small and large base ships and not the huge ships. I also feel like a lot of mechanics in regular ships are kind of overlooked for their broken nature in Epics. Like a new Chewbacca comes to mind.
No, and I agree, and I think there's a lot of hate for the huge ships in Epic, and I want to make sure all the listeners know that I truly believe that with the right builds, huge ships are not only viable, they are competitive in Epic, I don't want to change the topic, but I do just want to say that, you know, you can fly a Raider, you know, balls out and have a great time with it and actually wreck, you know, and the same thing, you know, I've been working on builds with a couple of transports in them, and they can really do some serious damage for not a lot of points. So, I love Epic, and I love flying huge ships personally. So when I build an Epic fleet, I usually always try to include one. Just because it's, you know, flavor for me. But happy to talk the non-huge side of things, but I just don't want people to... Because there's a lot of hate for huge ships out there. A lot of people think if you're going to play Epic, you have to not bring a huge ship to have a chance, and I don't believe that's true.
Oh, absolutely. Like, the Raider comes to mind in terms of, like, a really solid huge ship. The Transport's a great support ship. It's just I only had the Transport, and so... My side, and the other player on my side, only had a transport. So I just decided to run non-huge ships instead of having two transports, because I felt like that'd be a bit redundant. And so that's what got my mind on the non-huge
ships.
And
I absolutely agree with that. And then when you're playing with another opponent in an Epic, especially if you're arranging something beforehand, I love trying to talk about making sure we don't have a mirror match. Because what's the point of bringing 600 or 800 points of all rebel ships? You know, it's one of these things that if you're going to sit down and play this game for that long, let's have Imperials go against rebels. You know, that's the awesome thing of this game and the fun of it. So, yeah, that's good stuff.
Alrighty, so let's talk about some great ships in Epic. I think we can probably lean on our experience at Outrider, because that's probably the most competitive Epic that we've played, even though it's been a couple, I guess, what has been a wave and a half since then. And Darwin, one of the first things you and I were chatting about was like stick to efficiency, yeah. Right? Yeah. You know, there's... The more, it's a little bit redundant, but the more efficient, the more you can get out of each single ship you put on the table, because it multiplies as you have, you know, Carson, you say you're playing a 400-point game, 400 points of, like, X-Wings and B-Wings, that's, like, crazy. So much dice.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that, Dion. When you're going into an Epic 300, 400-point, you're... Our traditional 100-point ships that do well in standard play, they're not going to do well in Epic play. I mean, some of them will, but for the most part, when I'm putting together an Epic squad, I'm looking at the ships that bring efficiency. And by efficiency, I mean, what are you getting out of red dice and what are you getting out of hit points? Because you're going to have 12 or plus ships shooting at one or two of your ships each round. And a ship that you're pouring points into just isn't going to survive. It may get a shot off, but that might be it.
Yeah, I'm going to take a different angle on this. as far as the... Because I don't have a lot of experience with Epic other than the league that we ran. And when I ran that league, I had bought, like a lot of people do, you know, I bought the big, huge ships and took all the components for the 100-point lists. And just put the big ships back on eBay because I thought I was never going to use them, so I didn't have any Epic ships at the time. So I was flying a bunch of the little ships, and I saw that it worked out really well. I ended up beating most of the ship, most of the builds that have big ships on them, and I was flying things like a mine link, what are they called, the SIC interceptors. Just a bunch of Mangler cannon, mine link, SIC interceptors, and they're very efficient, they're very cheap. You can fit a bunch of them, and then a bunch of G1s with also mine link, and just everything getting a bunch of efficiency. But what ends up happening is, for me at least, it just becomes really tedious after the first two rounds, because you're sending so many dials and you're trying to, you know, it's like flying a swarm, but now you're flying a swarm with, instead of 5 and 6 ships, you're flying a swarm with 12. I think one time I brought 14 ships. So sending 14 dials every turn, even though it's efficient, even though it's strong, it just becomes tedious and not fun. And then one time I flew the, what is it called, the Gazanti? And I lost, but it was fun because it was, I was just flying, moving a big old ship, just taking my time with one ship. And for me, the, you know, epic is not about winning and or losing. It's about having kind of a role play experience and having this, you know, Dharma was talking about it, this kind of mission type of scenario where, you know, you have a big scale skirmish going on, and it's the experience more so than the winning for me. So as far as how much I can add to this conversation, I'm not a good epic player, I can't really say, but I do know that from just enjoyment side of it, you know, like Darwin said, I just had a lot more fun when I brought that big ship instead of trying to, you know, mess with 13, 14 different little small bases and setting a bunch of, you know, putting all my cards. I didn't even cleaning up 14 ships and putting them back in their case, was, it took me like an hour and a half. It was horrible.
Well, I'm gonna jump on the other train. I love bringing a bunch of little ships in Epic. I think it's awesome. I like flying big ships, but it depends on your mindset, right? So Marcel and Darwin were definitely talking about the scenario kind of thing. But let's say your modus operandi, like, I have come to win this Epic game, not just kind of play a scenario. Like, I want to win. I want to have a good time, but I also want to win. I think Marcel already touched on it. I think one of the most efficient cards in Epic, hands down, is Atani Mindlink. It is ridiculous.
It's broken in Epic.
Yeah, it is. Exactly. It is bonkers. So Darwin and I played against two of the Carolina Crates at Worlds, and the pre... it was Tyler and Ben, right? In the, like, the pre... It was like Thursday night or something like that. And they brought something like, how many, was it like 12 jump masters, 10 jump masters?
It was an IG, 6 jump masters, and there was something else.
And the triple tap boss. Yeah. The triple tap boss. So what they did, right? The triple tap boss had on it
operations
specialists. Yep. So he would fire, hope to miss, and trigger this focus. He didn't care if all those other ships crashed at PS3, his scouts, and then just focus would rain down from the heavens, right? So I mean, Mind Link is amazing. And because of Mind Link, one thing I want to talk about and kind of transition to is, where is the pilot skill that you want to be at, because that exists? A lot of the lower point scum ships that have EPTs are sitting at around pilot skill 4. Would you guys agree with,
that? Yeah.
Three, four, or five? Right? So if you don't want to get PS killed, like if you still want to bring a good chunk of ships, but you don't want to get PS killed, you're definitely going to want to be sitting at around pilot skill 4. And maybe if you can, depending on how you work out upgrades, if you can like sneak up to 5 and maybe start PS killing other things, that might work out even more in your favor.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that, Dion. And I think if you're playing Epic competitively to just wreck face, you go with the generic EPT scum with a tiny mind link. I think that's step one in winning an Epic. But that being said, if you're not going to play that list, to your question, though, that pilot skill becomes something you strongly have to consider. In Epic, there's a lot of action denial just because there's so many ships and so much blocking. Even if you're bringing small base ships, not just large base ships, your entire fleet's facing off against the other fleet, and there's going to be so many bumps and so much action denial that having a low PS gives you the ability to take actions and get modifications on your dice, whereas the higher PS skills give you the chance for your whole fleet or portions of your fleet to shoot first and possibly remove ships from the board before they get a chance. So it's that balance, and if you're expecting your opponent to show up with PS 3 and 4 scum Atani Mind Link, you have to plan for that, and you have to have a plan to beat that.
And then since we're talking about pilot skill, let's go to the upper echelon, right? Let's start talking about PS 9s and 10s and kind of like when you're in a 100-point game, paying 50 points for two ships and having that be your list, that works because most of the time you're not going to be playing against more than two or three ships, right? Darwin, you can go ahead and
And this goes on not only just high PS ships, but anything that you would consider your traditional arc dodger that you're going to pay a bunch of points to pour into pilot skill, multiple reposition, auto thrusters. That's not going to be effective in most Epic games. When you have so many arcs and so many ships shooting at you, you're not going to be able to arc dodge. And when you pour the points into a high PS ship or a ship that you've poured a bunch of points into upgrades to make a traditionally good ship, it's going to be a target priority. It's going to be the one that your opponent looks at your list and says, all right, well, that one's the one that's going to die first. And yeah, it may shoot at a PS 10 or 11, but when my entire fleet unloads on it, it's off the board. And you just lost 39 or 47 or 52 points. And, and then I got the advantage the rest of the game.
So a couple of examples would be like, we'll start in Scum. Like, there's no reason to bring Dengar in Epic, in my opinion, right? He'll get one shot off, sure. Like a retaliation shot, but I see Dengar on the board. I'm like, all right, everybody's gonna go kill Dengar, right? another example would be Nim, right? Like, oh, okay, you can do your cute bomb thing one time, but I'm gonna shoot you with 300 points worth of ships after that.
Exactly, and I think what you just hit on there with like you got to look at these pilot abilities. Dengar's ability says when you're shot, you can shoot back once per round. When you're building an epic list, anything that says once per round that works in standard, you have to think, does that actually work or is it efficient in epic play? Palpatine's another good example. You know, even post-Palpatine nerf, it's still a viable card. Pre-nerf, it was a great card. But even in epic, pre-nerf, changing one die in a 300 or 400 point game versus a 100 point game is a lot less efficient for the 8 points you're pouring into it. So you got to look at these upgrades and you got to say, is this still efficient? Is this still worthwhile in a 300 or 400 point game?
So I'm going to chime in, which is unusual because I don't play Epic ever, but I'm going to kind of flip the coin on that. So as you're saying, being weary of pilot abilities that trigger once per round or have a limit in the number of times that they can trigger, how much value do you put on some of those other ships that don't see standard play, like Etana Bot?
What does he do again?
Exactly. So when an enemy ship inside your firing arc at range 1-3 is defending. Oh, wait. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. So when an enemy ship inside your firing arc at range 1-3 is defending, the attacker may change one of its hit results to a critical result. So basically, if Etana Bot has any enemy ship in its firing arc, that means any other ship that is targeting a ship that is in Etana Bot's firing arc can change a hit into a crit.
Yeah. So that would be one where you could, if you wanted to, build some type of synergy off of that ability. Let's say you would put them next to, of course, right? Biggs, right? You put them next to Biggs.
Yeah.
Protect them.
Biggs and Lorik, oh God.
Yeah, you put them next to Biggs and Lorik. and you make sure that, you know, all your other ships shoot at this thing that you're trying to burn down. That sounds like an epic ship killer, because epic ships hate crits.
Yes, they do.
Especially if you have, you know, I would say upwards of maybe 5 to 6 ships shooting it in one round. That could definitely do some damage there.
Yeah, and Andrew, I'm glad you brought that up, because I wasn't trying to say that all pilot abilities are bad. I truly think that what makes a lot of our standard pilots so good don't work in Epic. But there are pilot abilities that you need to consider in Epic, especially ones that, instead of making themselves better, make your entire fleet better or have a lot of synergy, just like the one you mentioned. That's going to work great in Epic. And there are pilot abilities and upgrades that are very good, and there are pilot abilities and upgrades that are broken in Epic. And I think that that's what you need to do, is you need to go to your back of the binder cards and say, how does this work when I put 12 ships on the board, or I have 12 ships firing? Because I'm not trying to advocate against all pilot abilities. It's just got to be, if you're going to pour points into something, it's got to be for the right reason, not because it works in standard.
So play. Here, you know, I have an idea here. I'm going to go to Meta Wing. If you've never gone to that website, it's a really cool website. Shows like trends of the meta. And let's read down the top 10 pilots and see whether we would use them in Epic or not. Okay. So you start with Lorik. So while his ability, you know, we were kind of joking there with Lorik and Biggs, is great, if you just target Lorik, you know, yeah, he just disappears, right? So
yeah, and how many points is
exactly?
Lorik?
Lorik is base 28.
Yeah.
So
plus a few upgrades, and you're sitting in the 30s.
If it protects something like Eton or somebody else that's creating a synergy that's really powerful in your list, maybe having that other ship alive for an extra 1 or 2 turns is worth it.
Yeah, I agree. And also with the Azatec, I think that's especially good for Epic, because they have a permanent evade. So that evade is going to trigger every single shot. So, yeah, it will melt, but it will trigger. It'll stay alive one way or another for a little bit. Especially if you got another Azatec next to it with selflessness, and another one next to it with, you know, there's ways to keep it alive.
So let's keep going down the line here. We got Miranda Donnie, right? Her ability's cute and great in 100 point, but in 300 points, or Lord forbid, 400 points, that's not a good idea. She's going to get nuked. 1 agility, ships will die. Jess Pava. I think Jess Pava is great in Epic.
Absolutely.
She is awesome. Right?
Absolutely.
Because she has friendly ships everywhere. She's like, I'm just reroll everything all the time.
And the T-70 isn't bad in Epic either, especially with integrated astromech. I mean, that's a ship bringing 3 red die, 2 green die, and 7 hit points. I mean, that's the kind of ships you want to bring in Epic.
Ship number 4, currently popular in the meta, is Rebel Captain Nim. I think he has the same issue that Miranda does, is 1 agility. He will be able to put up 1 bomb in 1 really bad spot for you, right? And probably wreck your squad, especially if you're flying a tight formation. But it can die after that, pretty much.
Yeah, my mind went just down the minefield mapper route, thinking I've never played Epic against someone that brought minefield mapper, and I could see how that could suck.
Oh, my God, Darwin, we're doing this. You just did you say surround a huge ship with
ship with a bunch of cluster, with a bunch of mines.
That could suck. Just
6 Punishers and what is that, 12? Yeah, it would be terrible.
But if you know, actually, Marcel, if you surround me that tight, I just run them over and then recover and get those shields back. So they'd have to be a little place to really screw up my formation more than just next to me.
There you go, and then we'll go through a couple more of these. So Biggs, we know Biggs is good. Doesn't matter what format he's in, because he just protects something really expensive. Yeah. Next pilot most popular at 6 is Dash Rendar. Cool ability. I think it... I don't want to say it's terrible in Epic. I think the problem is that it takes up so many of your points.
Yeah, I think it's mediocre in Epic.
It'll hit one ship really hard. You know, for 4 hits maybe, but if you have 4 or 5 or even 6, like you can't arc dodge 300 points, or maybe you can if the person didn't plan for Dash, which happens. Correct. But, you know, if they know what's going on, they should be able to get him.
I think Dash could be good, but it's more his point toss at, 55, 56 points for a good Dash.
Yeah.
That's just, it could be spent so much better.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And then we'll round it out at number 7. Actually, maybe we'll go a little farther down. Fen Rao at 7. Like, no, you don't want to bring Fen Rao in Epic.
No.
You don't bring Zunderfell.
Yeah, exactly. You don't bring Zunderfell. Next, you got Captain Rex. Captain Rex's ability in Epic doesn't matter because it's, unless I would say maybe argue if you're like, you can shoot the Epic ship.
That's exactly what I was going to say, because in the Epic game that I played, Captain Rex did its work.
Really?
I mean, I just shot the Raider, and because he gave me initiative, the enemy team.
Okay.
My PS4 shot first, and so I suppressed the Raider for, I think, almost every round of combat the Raider was in.
Okay.
Why didn't the Raider just shoot Rex and kill it?
I was flying with Biggs and Low Rex.
Yeah, but the Epic ship gets to ignore Biggs' ability. An Epic ship doesn't have to shoot at Biggs.
Really?
Yep. Yeah. Epic ships get to ignore Biggs' ability, and other ships shooting at Epic ships can ignore Biggs' ability. So if you have Biggs next to the Tantive, I can shoot the Tantive. And if you have a fleet with Biggs in it, I can shoot something else other than Biggs with my Epic ship.
Oh.
Yep.
I did not know
that. We're learning.
So you cheated by accident. That's okay. People cheat by accident a lot in this game. Especially Epic.
Well, he didn't cheat. He just chose the wrong target to shoot at.
Yeah. There you go.
I legitimately did not know that.
He thought he was safe. Turns out he was safe.
Yeah, even though the Epic FAQ hasn't been updated in ages, there is a couple of cards in there that have different interactions in Epic.
Yep. Yeah, so we'll stop there going down the list. But yeah, so there's just a couple of examples how some pilots that are really popular at 100 point, you know, some of them work, some of them don't work as well.
And then there are the gems whose abilities you never even heard of, like Eitan Abbott, who might be just epic gold.
Andrea, you have to play an Eitan Abbott epic list at the next Outrider. This is what you've done to yourself. Let me know how that goes.
Yeah.
Hey, I can't wait to fly Zuckuss on the Sea Rock because that's just broken. Even post nerf. Oh, I'm an epic ship. I can't take stress. Oh, you're shooting me? Reroll all your dice. Oh, I can't take stress. Reroll all
there
your
you
dice.
Go. So, hey, that's to our advantage. Don't tell them. That's our secret tech. Nah, everybody knows that who plays Epic. So let's take a look at some ships that would be good in Empire, right? So I think the first ship that sticks out to me is the Defender. Then I'm actually going to rewind that. The reason why I didn't say TIE Fighter, okay? And I experienced this firsthand. Two dice versus reinforce makes you sad.
Gets you nothing.
Absolutely nothing. I was playing, we were playing our Epic League, and I was playing against our Epic League champion, Rick Thompson, and I brought a TIE Swarm. I was like, oh man, I'm going to wreck him. This is great. This is fantastic. And he goes, reinforce. I'm like, this is fine. I'll get some through. And you know, you throw enough, like, you know, blanks in there, even with how runner focuses, even though he had a PS12. PS12 Corvette that blew up my Howlrunner the first turn, you know. So,
ouch.
Yeah. So you can get really sad with two dice. I think in Epic you want to be sticking with three dice attacks, three or more. And that Defender just looks really good in Epic. I know it can be pricey.
But it's pricey for the efficiency that you get out.
Exactly.
Of it. And that you don't have to go with cheap ships. You need to go with efficient ships. And when I look at the Defender, I like the double tap.
Yes.
Defender. I the other Defender's good, but throw a cannon on that Defender and it be tractor beam, and you're lowering somebody's agility to nothing, or you're ioning something. I mean, let that Defender shoot twice and have all your other ships shoot after that. I mean, that's some raw efficiency right there.
some other things that could work really well in the Empire. You gotta play it smart, though, is using TIE advances. I know they have two dice, but if you're using that advanced targeting computer, that effectively is a guaranteed hit, but it's a crit, right, on the dice roll. So those are great.
See, and that's when I found success with carrying, not to go back to huge ships, but I like carrying four TIE advanced on the Gonzati. Because it protects them until the middle game or end game, and then all of a sudden I unleash all these four TIE advance that are getting automatic crits and on your ships that already have shields down, and they just wreck face.
Very nice, very nice. Then for Rebels, B-Wings, Y-Wings, X-Wings, I think all those are great. Let's be honest, right? If you're going to take a turret, you're going to take Twin Laser Turret. It's the best turret. Don't let anybody fool you.
In any format.
Carson, I don't ever want to hear you flying sync turret. Don't tell me it.
Wait, what about a sync turret rebel operative swarm?
No. Don't do it.
That means you have to buy a lot of hot hawks. You don't want to do that.
Oh, man. You know what? Like, I'm not even going to say it. No, TLTs are better. Don't do it.
Oh, are you going to say Autoblaster?
Autoblaster is the second best turret. And actually, Autoblaster and Epic, if you get in that big scrum, it's great. You just, like, block everybody. You have just, like, giant bubble of range one. Though, you got to remember, your turret carrier is also in range one of those other people's, probably their arc. So, you can die.
Just don't bring 12 TLT ships. That's no fun for anybody.
If you want to win, and you can.
No. I have never flown Epic with more than four ships of a single type. Even if you want to win, there four TLT Y-Wings is enough. You can backfill the list.
Yes, agreed. But you remember, you crushed four Y-Wings with TLT at Outrider. Do you remember that? Yeah. See, if you would have brought 12... No, I'm just kidding. You know, I do think definitely like epic play is definitely a little bit more relaxed, but that definitely is one where you, if you see somebody fly 12 Y-Wings with TLT, you do just give them a little bit of an eye and you go, fine.
Come on, bro.
We'll play this. You know, there's a strategy against that, though. Like, if they just kind of fly in a giant block formation, you know, you zoom in there fast, stay in range one, get behind, and start wrecking one agility ship. So,
yeah.
There's strategy there. There's some counterplay.
To go back to the competitive thing, and one thing I do want to just touch on, Dion, is if you're playing competitively and you don't have rules set, and there could be huge ships and there could not be huge ships, one of the things I think when you're building an epic squad is you got to think how you're going to deal with the huge ships. Kind of like I mentioned in the beginning, there are competitive huge ships, especially the missile boats, be it the Tantive or the Raider. You got to think, how is your list going to handle getting set up against a missile boat or a huge ship across the table? And the way I think the best thing that you can do when you build an epic squad is you got to build it with the intent that if you see a huge ship across the table, it's going to die, and it's going to die immediately. You got to be able to have an ability, and I'm not saying necessarily an alpha strike, but you got to have either an alpha strike or enough raw attack to set up across the table from an epic ship, drop it by round two or three, and then play your whatever's left of 300 points versus their 150 points that are left. If you don't, and you just say, oh, I'm going to ignore the epic ship, you're going to get run over. Or if you don't get run over, you're going to fight off their little ships, and then that epic ship's just going to be dropping one of your ships every single round.
I think
round.
A great example of that is, again, going back to Outrider, Rick, he had his Raider and some, I think, TIE Advance, and his opponent brought something like 12 Mangler Cannon Seeks, which for an epic ship is really scary, but he had bad target priority, and he started taking out the TIE Advanced, and the Raider soloed the guy's squad. Like, it was a stressful game for Rick, but, you know, by having bad target priority, this giant ship that people think, like, oh, they can't do that much damage, started just wrecking face. It was great.
Yeah. If you see an epic ship across the table, and you're flying a non-epic ship, you have to just plan to destroy it and then deal with the whatever's left after that. And in that specific game, he also had it. Well, I wouldn't say soloed it, because he also had one of the other broken cards in Epic, which is that TIE bomber. I think it's Captain Jonas, who lets you reroll all your secondary attacks. So when the Raider's shooting four times and all of four times are secondary weapons and he gets to keep rerolling all day, that helps.
Yeah, okay.
All right, Carson, we talked a lot about Epic. Are you full of Epic?
A little bit. I was going to mention, in regards to the small ships being set across from Epic ships and what to do to sink that ship, round one, Lieutenant Blunt with tracer threads in a Ordnance Sea Swarm. We'll get that done quickly.
Exactly. And if you have that, and I got an Epic ship across from you, and I have to place my Epic ship down first, that sucks. And in the same vein, if you're going to build a ship with an Epic squad in it, with a huge ship in it, you have to think to yourself, if there's an intense Alpha strike across the table, how am I going to combat that? How am I going to handle that? That's a bad thing to see for a huge ship.
Definitely can burn some things down real fast. And the thing is, like, if you're going to a tournament, right? Like, that's where the balancing comes. Like, if you know who your opponent is, like, the week before, you can probably create a little bit more of some type of synergy that's a little maybe more... Like, I think the Z-Swarm is really, really cool and definitely could burn down an Epic ship. But if I bring, you know, a bunch of PS6 defenders, then your Talas, or even if you're at Bandits or Talas, I can just kill a bunch of them and make your missiles not matter as much. Oh, you know, we have to back up real quick, though. Harpoon missiles are going to be amazing and Epic.
I can't.
My God. Broken. Yeah, see, broken. That's another broken card in Epic.
Well, you look at the huge ships really only have Reinforce as their defense. And so... Harpoon, in order to satisfy the condition card, is just having one uncancelled crit. So you just need to run a lot of things with Harpoon missiles, like Kirax Fighters, which have a native 3 dice primary, with guidance chips. And all of a sudden, from attacking the huge ship, not only do you sink a lot of damage there, but you start splash damaging and killing a lot of small ships around it, like the Skix.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we ever get a Epic update to the rules, the tournament rules, that it would say that Epic ships can't take conditions. I wouldn't be surprised.
I would be surprised that we ever get an update to the FAQ rules.
Well, I think that's one when we start talking about Outrider. That's probably one we should talk with the rules committee about, because I'm going to show this entire Epic ship the dark side, like the front or the back. I don't know. It doesn't say on the card. You know, it's like, I don't know. So yeah, if we ever get it,
we need an Epic FAQ so bad.
Yep. So, yeah, do you have any other questions or thoughts about that, or anything else you want us to chat about, Carson?
No, I think we covered it pretty extensively.
Awesome.
Other than, of course, new Chewie with Rage.
Yes.
Awesome and epic.
That can be pretty fun, for sure. So, those of you who don't know, new Chewie's, the Force Awakens, Chewbacca's ability reads... I want to read it word for word here, so I'm pulling it up.
What is it, like every time a ship dies, you get attacked?
Yeah, but you just spoiled Dion's fun, Jarin. Thanks. I mean,
I can just edit him out interrupting me. This is fine. So, I probably won't edit that one out.
You won't.
So, his ability reads, after another friendly ship at range 1 to 3 is destroyed. Yes, range 1 to 3. So, it's a really big window there, but has not fled the battlefield. You may perform an attack. Like, I like his ability. The issue there is, like, all right, so then I'm just going to kill Chewie, right? So that becomes my target priority. But if somebody doesn't kill Chewie, then you're wrecking face. Which, you know what? And that's one thing you have to – it's kind of funny. This is you always want to think the best of your opponents, but sometimes they mess up or they make the wrong choice, and that's okay. You take – and that's your job, to take advantage of that choice when that happens. Oh,
So Carson, what's your list? I want to hear it. You got Force Awakens, Chewie, and what, 12 Z's, or what do you got?
So it was a team epic match. So I had 200 points, and I put together new Chewie with a rage inspiring recruit in Kanan. So that's 47 points. I had Lieutenant Blunt with tracer threads and four TIE squadrons with cruise missiles and guidance chips. I had Captain Rex, just plain old Captain Rex, Lorik with Wookiee commandos and selflessness, and then Biggs R4-D6 integrated. But knowing now that Biggs doesn't work with epic ships, I would probably replace Biggs.
So how many times did Chewie's ability kick in?
Oddly enough, not that much, simply because I didn't end up losing many, but when it did kick in...
Just rolled natties, baby. That's awesome. All he did.
Yeah, he just wrecked face.
The only ship that I lost on my side was Lieutenant Blunt at the last turn of the game. My defense dice were on fire the entire game. It was like natties every time I rolled.
Well, you know what? Sometimes that's just what you need to win. That's fine.
Oh, and that actually just reminded me. An upgrade card, which is fantastic and epic, is M9G8. You just lock onto a huge ship, and you make it reroll every time it attacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is my rebel build, Carson. I take Jess Pava with M9G8, and I target lock the missile boat Tantive, and Jess gives, you know, gets all the rerolls, and the Tantive shoots four times and gets all the rerolls.
That's great.
Awesome. So we're gonna move on to our second topic here, and we're gonna bring it in. We were having our nice casual epic, and now we're getting real serious. All right, guys, real serious.
Super serial.
Super serial. Hey everyone, I want to take a moment to talk to you about the Michigan GT. It's happening October 6th, 7th, and 8th. There's a hangar bay on Friday, the X-Wing Championship on Saturday, and an awesome narrative event on Sunday. The badge for the Michigan GT is only $10, and they even have a package if you want to do all of the X-Wing events that weekend. Go to michigangt.com for more information, and I hope to see you there. So we're going to talk about pace of play.
Oh, this is why you invited me today.
No, we invited you for epic.
This is a sore spot.
This is going to be great. Marcel, are you there?
Now I am.
Okay, so this
I turned off for epic.
I have the two perfect people here for this because yes, this is going to be great. Okay, so now let me preface. We are talking about competitive tournament play. I don't care what happens at your casual nights. That's fine. You do what you want there. You go as slow as you want. You drink beer while you play, or soda if you're underage, and you have a good time. I'm talking about competitive play. You are trying to win, let's say, the 2016 North American Championship or something of those sorts. Okay? So FFG defines X-Wing as an exciting, fast-paced dogfighting game set in the Star Wars universe. That's in both of the core rulebooks, okay? And the tournament rules only actually reference pace two times. And it's not even in reference to... Let me just read it. So under the description of formal tournament tier, not under premier, but under formal, it says players should be familiar with the game rules and be prepared to exercise that knowledge to play at a reasonable pace. Okay, so that's your first one in the rules. And then under margin of error, when they're talking about like accidentally bumping ships, it continues to say that a small margin of error is allowed in the position of the orientation of the ships in these situations so that the pace of the game is not unnecessarily affected. Those are the only two times pace of play are ever referenced, and never directly referenced to how you should play during the game. Okay? So, what I'd like is each of us to give me your personal beliefs and what you believe pace of play should be, what you've experienced. Just expound on it. I'll let you start, Marcel.
I want to hear Darwin first because he seemed really passionate about it.
I referenced the FFG floor rules,
the ones that don't exist.
Exactly. Okay, pace of play. I would define it as the appropriate amount of time it takes to efficiently decide on a set of options or actions and execute them for your game. And I know that's incredibly ambiguous, but what I struggle with and what I have found when I play competitively is that, especially in the opening engagements, when there's a number of different permutations that need to be considered, a number of different options that you have to evaluate, that it takes time to decide what's the best thing to do for your ships, for your maneuvers, for your actions. And I've heard a lot of times in different podcasts talk about it should be defined as so many seconds per ship or so many seconds per opportunity or, you know, so much time for the whole game. I think those are all good in the sense that it will advance this issue because we need something to address it, but it's not good enough for me. I think there's times when I need, and you can y'all yell at me, I need 10 minutes. I need 10 minutes to look at the board. I got 3 ships. You got 4 ships. I got to see where all they're going to go, the interactions, the actions I'm going to take, the repositioning, and then I'll execute. And you'll see as I get into a game and I play longer into the game that in the middle game and the end game, it's a lot more faster because there is less permutations to consider. So I think it's just being, I think the pace of play is being efficient in your decision process of the things that the actions and the opportunities that you have to consider.
Awesome.
Okay. Now I'll go. So pace of play, this is kind of a sore spot for me because I do play at a lot of major events and time and pace become a big issue, especially as you get down into the matches that are for elimination and there's something at stake. For me, the definition of pace of play is there are certain builds and certain combinations that tell you, sorry about the sirens in the back, that tell you that you know up front these want to play slow because they don't, the longer it goes, the worse it is for them. And that creates a certain play style among those players that just gets long over time. And it's just not consistent, and it's not fast-paced dog-fighting action. It gets really slow and methodical. Now, Darwin talked about the A, floor rules that don't exist, and B, you know, some of the people, me included, that say there should be some type of time limit for the number of ships and how much time, and there should be sort of like chess where there's a timer. Even though this is not like chess, there should be a timer per, you know, so if you get 45 seconds per ship and you got 5 ships, you got 45 seconds times 5 to set your dials and then X number of things. But I also agree with Darwin that sometimes there are critical points in the match where you have to make a very difficult decision and you have to think about it and you have to measure and you have to analyze, because at the end of the day, this is still a strategic game. It's you have to strategize and you have to really think about what you want to do. And that's where I think the floor rules come in. Setting up those defined times is, you know, you have X number of seconds or minutes to put together your choices. But let's say each player gets 2 timeouts. So each player gets 2 times during the match where they can say, hey, this is one of those moments that it's a critical moment for me and I'm going to take an additional 2 minutes to think and I'm going to declare my thinking time. My additional 2 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever that's established at, because there are those critical points. There will be 1 or 2 turns in a match that are more critical than, you know, the opening engagement being one, and then maybe down the line when a single choice is going to make a big difference. So I think that a floor rules that establishes what the right amount of time between setting dials and moving and taking actions is, plus one or two, I would say two, timeout periods or time extensions for critical game state scenarios is where I believe it would kind of satisfy most people that, you know, it would just satisfy most things, in my opinion. So that's just where I'm at.
So pace of play is a very hard thing to define because it's going to be subjective based on the person and the circumstance. For example, if I'm flying a list, like a Fairship Rebel or some kind of slow-rolling Rebel list, I'm not going to need a lot of time for the first few moves. I'll probably just, you know, do one forward or two forward or one bank or two bank, something like that. So if I were taking, say, 5 minutes to decide my first move, I think that would be considered unreasonable. This is not to deny that there aren't those moments in the game, like both Darwin and Marcel were referring to, where they're critical moments, where it's my opponent could either be going here or here, and I have to decide what my move is based on what I think he's going to do. And that could take a long time. But I also think pace of play depends not on how long it's taking you to set your dials, but when it is time you're delaying. If there's 5 minutes left, and there's two ships left on the board, and it's very clear what your move is going to be or what your opponent's move is going to be, and they're taking a very long time to set their dials and say they're head on points or something like that, that's when I think pace of play comes into play, and not necessarily in the middle or in the opening.
Alrighty. So, Andrea, are you ready?
I don't really know what the right answer is. I get the concept of having time allotted for ships and that the idea is to prevent people from taking too long of turns. But I'll play devil's advocate on that, and I'll say if someone knows that they have 45 seconds to set a dial and it is to their advantage to play the game slower, you better be sure there will be competitive play people that will take 45 seconds for every dial no matter what the situation.
Agreed.
So I'm not really sure what the answer is, because although you can prevent people from taking too long, you can also enable people to take longer.
Yeah, that's,
I don't disagree, but at that point you're walking in to a match with that expectation already set, so it eliminates the hard feelings side of it. You know, in basketball, you know you have 24 seconds. Is it 24 seconds? Yeah, it's 24.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
I have no idea how long the shot clock is, but that's a perfect example. People will at the end of the game, they will hold onto that ball as long as they can before they take that shot.
Exactly, and same thing with football. And yet, there is neither side of the team or neither side of the fans going in an uproar, because that's the expectation. That's the path to victory. But that's the path to victory within the actual written rules of the game, where right now, what happens is those rules aren't written. So when somebody takes that same amount of time, it creates a negative experience for one side, which then starts blaming the other side. Now it becomes a negative experience for the other side. Now you call the judge. The judge comes over, and it takes time for the judge to come over, and it just kind of snowballs. So that's where I'm saying, yeah, some people may take advantage of it, but at that point it becomes part of the game and becomes part of the strategy. And it becomes part of the strategy that when you start playing the game, you have that expectation from the beginning.
Exactly, and I truly believe that I know that the majority of the community want to see floor rules. I also think that if there's ever truly a floor rule made on pace of play, the majority of the community will hate it. But at the end of the day, after all these podcasts from their episodes about how bad the new floor rules are and how it's unfair to players and how they're going to manipulate it, me, you, Dion, everybody's going to show up to a tournament and know the rules we're playing by. And though I may not agree with it, and though it may affect how I play a game, as Andrea said, I'm going to take full advantage of the rules. So as a community, though I want to see floor rules, and though most people want to see floor rules, we have to make a decision that in just fun play and casual play, we may not want that, but in competitive play, we should all know the rules we're playing by and all have to follow those rules.
I don't disagree with that. And I do think there should be set rules. I'll just give an example of my experience kind of with the pace of play. I was at a tournament and it was getting down to the wire. I believe by the time the match ended, there's only about less than 5 minutes. But this was a few turns before it ended, so when there's, I think, about 7 minutes left, my opponent was ahead on points. But the opponent could not kill my ship that I had remaining, and so my opponent decided to run. That's a perfectly valid strategy to kind of run that timeout, is to run. But I don't think you should be able to delay the setting of your dials, because in that situation, if you choose to delay setting your dials, your opponent has no way to play the game. If your opponent can figure out a way to catch you and to destroy your last ship or get ahead on points, he or she should be able to do that, or have at least the ability to do that, rather than deny play to your opponent by saying, I'm not going to set my dial right now, or there's 2 minutes left and there's a rule like what Marcel suggested. I'm just going to take 2 minutes to set my dial, which will run the game out. And I think that kills the spirit of the game, in my opinion.
I agree at a casual level. But, you know, this kind of even goes back to Duncan and Heaver and what some of the other people were doing with the... what is it called? Like the agreed upon draw or whatever it was called.
Intentional draw.
It's
ID.
Intentional draw, yeah. So it goes back to the point of you had 75 minutes to play your match, understanding the rules from the beginning, just like in football, just like in basketball or any other timed competitive match. You knew the rules coming in. You knew that that was a possibility. You know how many rounds you're going to play mathematically because it's established. So if you were in a position where you're chasing and you're running out of time, that in a competitive at the premier level events, this is not something that I would suggest for even store championships, just for premier level events. You know what you're coming into, and if you put yourself in a position where you don't have time to win, you had 75 minutes to not let that happen, and your opponent outplayed you by that point. It's same thing, you know. That's kind of the argument that Duncan and some of the other folks were making, that if you went 5-0 on a tournament, you've played well enough and you've proved your point that you can take a round off and go home and get some good sleep for the next day. That's your prize for being a good player. You've played well enough to do that, and same thing in this scenario is, you know the rules, you set yourself, you spent the first 70 minutes outplaying your opponent, now you're going to use the remaining 5 minutes to finish it off, and the opponent had just as much amount of time to play their match and put themselves in a situation to win.
Alrighty, I'm gonna take over now. I know. Andrea, go ahead, and then I gotta wrap it up. I got a nice bow for this.
Okay, that's all. I was just gonna say. So you just drew something up interesting in my mind, Marcel. Is, you know, saying especially at premier events, if we have these agreed upon rules, do we need to have different rules for different levels of play?
Well, I mean,
I don't think it's different rules. I think it's different levels of enforcement, Andrea.
That's what I would say. Different levels
or just different, you know, maybe the timing is different, or maybe there's something about it that's different. So at premier events, these are the rules that we play by. At the next level down, I don't even know what it is. These are the rules we play by. And then at casual level events, these are the rules we play by.
Yeah, I think you have set level of rules, and then you have premier level events are are you play by the rules, and if you get lower in the tiers of play, then you give the TO more control over which rules to enforce, but as long as they're established up front. I mean, not enforced.
I wouldn't want to put that power in the TO, because then that just gives people room to complain.
Well, that's coming in the same spot. From a TO, so.
Yes, exactly. But right. We would just be at square. We'd be the same place we are now, where people wouldn't feel that it's too subjective if you leave it to you.
So I think the same rules work. I think the difference here, Andrea, is if you go to Worlds and we say the rule is, I'm just going to pick one, though I don't agree with it, 45 seconds per ship per round or something. There's a clock at the table, you know, and it's enforced explicitly that this is the rule you're going to play by. And then when we go to store championships, it's still the same rule, but there's no clock at the table. There's no real enforcement. And when your opponent calls over a TO and says, hey, my opponent's slow playing, the TO can get out his watch and say, hey, you got two ships. You got a minute and a half. Set your dials. So I think it's the same rules. I just think it's the amount of enforcement you put on those rules at different levels of play.
I haven't put my thing on it, because I have some data to back up some things, and I'm gonna take some of your guys' arguments and I'm gonna put a nice bow on it. Here we go. So first, you know, we try to define what we would like as pace of play. We pretty much got to the point where I put in the notes where I said, let's try to define slow play, because we all gave our examples of that. Now, in every single one of your guys' explanation, all of you use the words, I feel, and I think. So one of the issues, and we're just talking about the way the rules are right now, is that, and we all said this, that it's very subjective right now. Who knows what really is too long? What is too short? I'm going to give a couple of different examples. What if, you know, there's a brand new player to the game? You know, what is slow for them? You might not know that at a premier level event. Like, hey, they wanted to play X-Wing at Worlds and they got a ticket. You know, are they taking too long? ? How do you really know if your opponent is taking advantage of X, Y, and Z? But I definitely agree with Marcel. It's like, hey, you got to put yourself in a position to not let the clock be a factor. So let's look at a couple things. What I want you guys to do is, in the chat, I want you to take a guess with a number of how many rounds do you think you play in a single game of X-Wing. 75 minutes. How many rounds do you get in? I want you to just put that in to the Zencaster chat. Okay? So that I can see your names. Okay? Give me one number. Don't give me a giant range. One number. So I'm going to give them a second to do that. The Zencaster chat, Marcel. Man, doesn't listen to instructions. Jesus. Alrighty. So.
Wait, I was muted. Alright, let me think about this. Let me think about it.
Okay. So.
Wait. Let me see. 2016 Worlds? There you go. I mean, 2016 North American Championship.
Right on there. Average. Let's call it on average. X-Wing game, 75 minutes. All right. So they put their little guesses in, and I'm going to kind of give some data. So one thing, this was something that came up when I was chatting back and forth with a friend of the show, Chris Allen. And he runs the Carolina Crate podcast. And even though on his show, you know, he basically plays a character who's just kind of like ringing at people all the time, smart guy. And we were, one thing we came about, it was like wondering, it's like, hey, how many rounds do you actually think you have, like, to play an X-Wing? And can you plan for that? And I just kind of talked to a bunch of different people in different chats. And I got ranges of people guessing. Oh, I mean, I had somebody guess up to like 32, like, oh, yeah, like 32 turns. So what I did is I decided to take some data. And I took streams from premier and formal level events. I took 50 different video streams, and I counted how many ships each person had and how many rounds they played. Also, I documented how long each of those matches went. Of the matches, so of them, was 92% of them went 60 minutes or more. Okay? And the average number of rounds was only 11. Okay. Now you guys were very close in your guesses. We're talking about slow play. You guys probably figured that's where I was going there. But for some people, that's a big surprise. Like, whoa, wait, 11? Now I will say, if we kind of look at my ranges here, the highest game I counted was 24 rounds.
That was a fun game.
Okay.
Wow.
And the lowest I have here is 6. Okay.
Okay.
You mind saying what ships they were in the sixth one?
Will not. I won't give that data. I'm not going to publish it because I have names and things attached to it and all that stuff. So,
okay, was Biggs involved?
In the sixth round one?
Yeah.
Yes. that's a really interesting number, in my opinion, because in 11 rounds... And this is, I counted also, like, there were some of them that were listed at, like, 14, 15 rounds. But let's say somebody castled for four turns. It was, like, actually more like half. Or, like, let's say if they've castled for four rounds, in my mind, I kind of cut that in half. It's really, like, 12. But I gave the actual number of turns in there. Knowing the number of rounds, I think, can help a couple of things. It first can give you a realistic... feel for what the actual current tournament pace of the game is. You have 11 turns to win the game. Don't think you're going to get 13. Don't think you're going to get 25. But also knowing the average number can, let's say, a player who considers themselves a fast player, someone who wants to play fast, if you're only getting 11 consistently and you're planning for 20, you probably should adjust your strategy. Now, if your games are going under that 11 mark, let's say your games are consistently 6 or 7 turns, I would consider you going a little bit slow. Now, Darwin, earlier you talked about, you know, there's those moments in the games where it's like, hey, I need to take some time. Every single one of these games had that turn or two, and it happened right when the opening engagement happened. And then this, like, what Marcel was talking about, like this 50-50 opportunity, it's like, this is what decides the game right here. Those were the two turns in every single game that existed. They all had them. And what happened in a lot of the other matches when that were closer to that 11 is that most of the time the players were keeping a decent pace, but what takes up most of the time, which you might not be thinking of, is moving the ships. The more ships that are on the board, the more times it takes. The more accurate you want to be when moving the ships, the more times it takes. Now, I think accuracy with the ships is really important. Very few times did I see somebody actually, what I would consider, deliberately just standing there staring at a dial doing nothing. And again, I watched 50 games in a row looking just for these things, and I'm going to continue documenting this and see where that number falls. And I only did games in our current meta, so our current FAQ since the most recent ships came out. This is with Nim and the Auzatuck, and the Aggressor out there. So I just think that information is really interesting. Plan for 11. That is your magic number. If you can't get it done in 11, don't expect more than that.
to expound upon that, yep. Dion, I think that not only do you plan for 11, you squad build for 11. Yeah. If there's a certain ability that you're looking at for an upgrade card or a pilot ability, and you say to yourself, you know, this is good in my list if it can go off 6 times, and you know there's only going to be 11 rounds, is it going to go off 6 times? You know what I mean? Like, you can't plan for something, oh, well, if this goes off 10 or 15 times this game, I'm going to wreck face. Well, you don't even have that many rounds. So I think that's really good data.
Yeah.
Really, that's powerful to know from a competitive
scene. Yep, and I really debated whether or not I was going to publish this, but I was like, I have to, right? Because it's important. I want to put everybody on the even playing field, but there are people who the people who have the understanding of the pace of the game, like, for instance, people who play FSR well, okay, they are going to be using this number 11, even if they don't know the number. They know about where they need to be in order to get into an advantageous position. When I was talking with Chris about it, the big reason he wanted to know was he was judging at the Nova Open. And we wanted to figure out what was this number that needed to exist, or what was the number so that he could have a good good feel about what the pace of play is. So let's do some on the spot math here. You got 75 minutes. You divide it by 11. That gives you almost
6.8 minutes.
About 7 minutes.
But most games don't go 75 minutes. We got to go with like 65.
Sure,
minutes.
But
I mean, what's the average game length?
The average game length I had here was 60 minutes.
Okay, so what's 60 divided by 11?
So 60 divided by 11 is 5.5, roughly. Yeah. So,
and that's how when I guessed 12 in the chat, I said 12 5-minute rounds.
Right.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, so, and usually what ends up happening, of course, is that the first, like the moving of ships in the first couple turns is faster because you don't have to worry about bumps and rocks, and usually everything's nice and clear. The round length lengthens as you get to the end of the game, even if you just have two ships there, because people are being really careful. Things just really slow down. So just be aware of that, and use it to your advantage in whatever way you want. But I think it was just important information for everybody to know. And what I did at Nova for myself was I was taking notes, guys. Yeah, you know, you can yell at me. I was making little marks for each turn just to kind of confirm, and I was always in all my games were 10 to 13 rounds. All of them. That's where they fell. So it was consistent with the data that I had. And in my squad building and practice going forward, I'm going to be practicing for 11.
Do you live in the Chicagoland area or plan on visiting? Come on down to Pastimes Comics and Games, the home of Gold Squadron, where we play X-Wing every Wednesday and have tournaments the first Sunday of every month. We also play Imperial Assault, Armada, LCG, and Destiny on different days. Visit our Facebook page, Pastimes Star Wars, for more information.
So I want to thank everybody for listening to this episode today. Carson, thanks for joining us, man.
Oh, thanks for having me. I had a blast.
Awesome, awesome. Well, if you want to watch live X-Wing events and content, you can go to twitch.tv/GoldSquadronPodcast. And before I go on the rest of the close, I have a little surprise that's coming here on Twitch. And I figured since this won't publish for a week, I'll let you guys in on this. You guys ever watch Mystery Science Theater 3000?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay.
So, a little bit.
So the idea, like the most popular part of the show was when the main characters were basically sitting in what looked like a theater, looking at a screen, and basically being funny and commentating towards the video that they're watching. It's usually like older videos, sometimes PSAs, just kind of all kinds of silly things.
That's the only part of the show worth watching.
Correct. basically, we're going to be doing an X-Wing version of this. I'm working on a title. Mine is just way too on the nose right now. I need a better title. But not necessarily making fun of people, but having a good time watching Vassal Games, because we have this public viewable games. And sometimes I know there's plenty of people who are like, man, I can't get Vassal or my computer. Like, man, I'd really like to watch some X-Wing, but there's nothing happening. Or I can't get to my computer right now. I have just my phone. I'm going to be every Friday. I'm going to get the time set here pretty soon. Every Friday night, we're going to be broadcasting live Vassal Games. And I have a host of characters that will be with me. This is going to be a great... I'm so excited for this. And I'm working on figuring out how to get other people to commentate with me over the internet, so we'll get that working. But this is going to be a lot of fun, and that's going to be a staple of our show through this kind of downtime in the season before we.
I was going to say you're just looking for things to do now that Star Championships are done.
Well, I mean, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be great. I think people are really going to have some fun with it, and we have the Vassal League starting up here pretty soon, and our podcast, Gold Squadron Podcast, is one of the sponsors for the Vassal League, and this is another way we're going to be showing our support for that. So, yeah.
Can you please overlay shadows of your head on the Vassal screen?
I'm going to send you a screenshot after we're done with this, and you I think you'll be giddy with what you're going to see, okay? All righty. So I lost my spot here. So, yeah, if you want to watch those, go to twitch.tv/GoldSquadronPodcast, and you can watch the replays of our past broadcast as well as our upcoming working title is Galactic Theater 5000. We'll work on a better title. But lastly, if you enjoy the show and want to help us continue expanding our content while getting awesome swag, go to patreon.com/GoldSquadronPodcast. All right, Carson, close us out, buddy.
For Marcel, Andrea, Darwin, and Dion, this is Carson Norwood, Gold Squadron out.
Hey, Dion, yep. In all those games you watched, was I in any of them?
Yes.
How many rounds were I?